potential that we may be called to return. We're waiting on the House action regarding the potential override on the transportation bill. That said, we have six items on the agenda, and the first will be Senator Olsen, Senate File 2988. As you recall, we've had discussion about student safety over the interim. Each student and their parents and others expects that the ride to and from school is a safe one. Nearly $500 million is spent by school districts in Minnesota each year to achieve that safe ride goal. And by and large, it's a job well done. Most of those rides are safe. But unfortunately, in those situations where there's injury or tragedy, we're reminded that there's more that we can do. Senator Olsen and Senator Hahn have co-chaired a subcommittee to look at various recommendations, and part of those recommendations will be before us today in Senate File 2988. Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I need to thank you for allowing us to have these subcommittees over the interim. I think it gave us an opportunity to really spread our wings a little bit. And Senator Hand and I on school bus safety, I think this went much farther than we ever anticipated. And it's probably driven by some unfortunate incidences. But I'll just give a brief overview of the bill, and then I have my first testifiers to address the bill. We were looking at these Type 3 vehicles, which school buses are divided into four categories. There's maybe it's five. But there's the Type 3 vehicle, which is like a Dodge Caravan or a Suburban. There's a Type A, which is a bus body with like a van front. Your Type B, C, and D. So this bill addresses the Type 3 vehicle and who can operate those vehicles.
Now, that's correct, Senator, and I believe that the Type 3 would be 10,000 pounds or less?
The weight, the 10,000, that is correct, but that's also in the Type A vehicle is 10,000 and less. And so these are, yeah, probably 10,000 and less, but that's really not in language. It's more in language about that it's more of a passenger vehicle. And
cars, station wagons, vans, the smaller vehicles.
That is correct. That is correct. And unfortunately, the Berglunds are here today to testify on what seems to be a big loophole in the law. And I cannot say it better than they can, so I'm going to turn this over to Bill and Karen Berglund to talk about their daughter, Amanda, and what happened to her.
Thank you, Senator.
Hello.
Welcome to the
good afternoon, Senators. My name is Bill Berglund. On May 17th, 2007, our daughter, Amanda, did not make it home from school. Due to the careless and irresponsibility of a person driving her back and forth to school every day, she was killed on May 17th, and because of the law that the school bus should have had these drivers required to have the training that we thought would have been the same as a normal school bus driver would have to have. They didn't have to have drug testing. They didn't have to have background checks. They didn't have to have any of these situations. And in our case, our daughter, driver, was driving under the influence of marijuana and smashed into another bus that shouldn't have been stopped in a spot where he was supposed to be in the first place either. Do you want to say anything?
Thank you. Mr. Berglund.
The biggest thing is we were under false pretenses, assuming our daughter was taken care of the same way she was as she was within the district, being bused back and forth and needed to be bused out of the district because Forest Lake Schools couldn't meet her needs in a deaf and hard of hearing program. So we just assumed when the switch of the transportation that was still under, you know, the Forest Lake Schools responsibility that she would still be taken care of safely like she was with the same qualifications. And as soon as she was bused out of the district, she was put in a minivan with somebody who doesn't require anything. And with that, there was marijuana in the system, marijuana in the vehicle, no pre-employment drug testing, nothing. Had we known that, we would have never, ever put her in that van.
And as she said again there, we had no inkling that these people did not have to have the same requirements as the normal bus drivers. We just trusted them in it. Just, you know, you send your kid to school on the school bus, and you just feel and hope to God they come home safe every day. But normally your heart is there. But when we found out that this driver didn't have to have the same requirements, the drug testing to background checks, I mean, we didn't know. We don't know what, you know, and by law that wasn't in effect. And to me, it's a common sense law. When your kid's going, I mean, if me as a parent to go to my kid's school, any function, I have to have a background check. You know, and but this person is driving your kid around, coming home from school. Again, it was, we were dumbfounded to find out that they didn't have to have the same requirements as a bus driver. So to find that out, and then again, you know, in our situation, the driver had the marijuana in the vehicle with him, and he was under the influence of it as he's driving her home. You know, and that doesn't make any sense. There's no sense to it whatsoever. And we're gonna have to live. It's heartbreaking. We're gonna have to live with this for the rest of our lives. Yeah. Not, you know, trusting in something that's completely completely should have been in effect before this company that started driving children around should have had this in place in the first place, as far as I'm concerned, because they should have done the drug testing. They should have had, just if you're gonna start the company up, you should know background checks on your employees and do drug testing. Just plain and simple. I mean, most jobs you start with, if you're a union carpenter like I am, you got to take a drug test. You know, why wouldn't you have to have when you're driving children or people around in general? That's your job. So we really hope that this law just gets changed.
It's unfortunate that it took our daughter, but we can protect other children out there.
We join with all Minnesotans in the tragic loss of Amanda, and thank you for sharing your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, a number of factors have come together to form Bill 2988, and the Berglund story, the officer, the legislative auditor doing an audit on school bus safety in Minnesota, working with Captain Urquhart of the State Patrol, working with some of the student transportation groups, have all had input into this bill. And I think we've come forward today with a very good bill. The Berglunds, and we're talking about pre-employment drug and alcohol. We've got that in the bill. We've got random drug and alcohol screening. We've got, unbelievably, you can operate a Type 3 vehicle today with up to the legal limit of alcohol in your system. So that's gone. They're at a zero tolerance for alcohol in their system. We kind of went down a litany of suggestions from the State Patrol and from the Office of the Legislative Auditor's recommendations, and we put them in the bill. The requirements, those are basically the requirements for the driver, is to have pre-employment drug and alcohol screening, random, being subject to random drug tests, and then the medical card. And then we took a lot of the language that is for the Type A vehicles. They're the like I mentioned earlier, they're like a van front and a bus back. And so there's a number of requirements of training for those people to operate those vehicles, and we've switched that over to the Type 3 vehicles. Now, we have exempted school district employees that do not, who their normal duty is not to operate a bus. We're exempting them. We're looking at, like, the debate coach or the math league coach that we felt that by requiring them to have these additional requirements, number one, they're already subject to drug and alcohol screening pre-employment, and number two, they're working with kids as part of their regular job as a teacher, so a lot of that training we felt was probably duplication of what they already do. So, but other than that, I think if you look through the bill, you can see that we have really tightened up. There's no longer going to be anybody who will be operating a Type 3 vehicle with, or if they are, there's going to be some severe consequences. And ironically, I don't know if I should bring this up, but the company that had hired the person that caused the accident, they had some concerns also that and we put language in the bill to address that, that anybody who has been arrested for a DWI or a crime, that they report that. And the reason is that they explained to us that if they have somebody that been pulled over with alcohol in their system, they can claim American Disabilities Act and ask for treatment. So that's something that we've had to work around, and the solution was by requiring the person who has a DWI or a drug offense or something to report it to their company, which, of course, they probably will not do because they'd be fired. But it does give that company, once they find out about it, it gives them the ability to discharge that person. Otherwise, they felt that there's a loophole there that they could claim American Disabilities Act, that they might have an alcohol problem or a drug problem, and then, you know, ask for help. So we did include that language in the bill. So with that, I think I'll let you guys step down and then have
thank
the
you,
Captain
Mr.
Urquhart
Mrs. Berkley.
Thank you.
The captain has been very helpful working with. In subcommittee, I said, you know, he said, Senator Olsen, I can't tell you write the bill, but if you look at 169A and 171, I think you'll find what you're looking for. So he's been very helpful in finding language that we thought would address the concerns that we have.
Thank you. Welcome back to the committee, Captain.
Mr. Chairman, members, just a few background items, and some of you have heard these things before.
Captain, please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Ken Urquhart. I'm a captain of the State Patrol. I also serve as the Pupil Transportation Safety Director for the Department of Public Safety. Presently, the employees in my division inspect about 14,000 school buses annually, and we are required every year to inspect those vehicles. In addition to that, approximately 2,400 of those vehicles are of the Type 3 variety that we're discussing here today. In addition to that, there's approximately between 19,000 and 20,000 endorsed school bus drivers that have valid school bus endorsements in Minnesota at any given time. And I have worked with Senator Olsen and provided him some background information on some of the things that exist in the law today, and I think he touched on one that was very important, is that a Type 3 school bus driver today, other than the requirement of having a valid driver's license, there really are no additional requirements. So theoretically, that driver could be transporting a child to school and have alcohol on board, and as long as they're not above the prohibitive level any other driver would be required to comply with, they're not in violation of the law. And I think that we're treating children on different levels when we transport them to and from school based on the vehicle they're being transported in. So if you have any questions or...
Questions of Captain Urquhart. Thank you, Captain. Next, from the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association, Galen Lenz. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Galen Lenz with the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. We have talked with Senator Olsen in the past about this, and we've tried to give some input on this. We recommend this bill. We do have one concern, and I brought it up to his office, though, is we are concerned about the exemption. We feel that we'd like to see everybody have all the same requirements, whether they're a teacher or not. Some teachers, when you read about them, have slipped through the cracks in the past where they've been had their background checked right away when they're employed and may have had some violations since then. That is our only concern. There might be some language that could be cleaned up a little bit, but that is our only concern as far as our standpoint. Otherwise, we like the bill that Senator Olsen has put forward. We think that everybody should be on the same field, though, and everybody should be have the same requirements.
Thank you, Mr. Lenz. There's three additional committees that this will be reviewed, and you have the author's commitment and co-authors to work in addressing any unintended consequences. Is there anyone else that would like to address the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olsen.
David Peterson, I won't get the acronym right, but he would like to testify on behalf of BUS.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Peterson.
Senator Wieger, members of the committee, my name is David Peterson. I'm communications officer with the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation. We represent school district transportation offices. And we substantially agree with the bill as it's currently written. We agree with drug testing for type 3 drivers. We agree with the background check for type 3 drivers. We do still have some concerns about the bill, and we'd like to be able to offer some amendments as the bill makes its way through different committees.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to address the committee? And members, we are being called to go back to the Senate for a vote. And is there any further discussion on an issue that we have discussed during the interim?
Just a brief note,
Senator
Mr.
Chair. Saltzman?
You know, I think the fact that we sit here and listen is that we understand the importance of this bill. And sometimes we give a lot more discussion, and because we're not talking about it does not mean that we don't feel that this is very important. It's that I believe we think this is something that should be done. And so the Berglunds, I just want you to know that we hear you, and it's something that we wish we could have perhaps seen beforehand. But you have brought this to our attention, and I thank you for that and the courage of coming here and repeating your story many times. So thank you very much.
On behalf of the committee, we share those comments, and I want to reiterate my gratitude to Senator Wolcine and Senator Hand for their diligent work in crafting recommendations, and there will be some additional suggestions we'll be looking at as well. Senator Wolcine, would you like to make a motion, and it would go to the Judiciary Committee?
Mr. Chair, I would like to make that motion, but I think Senator Murphy wants to hear it maybe before that. I'm not sure. Oh, do you have Judiciary?
Yes.
I'd like to move it to Judiciary.
On the motion by Senator Wolcine, all in favor indicate aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much, Senator Wolcine, testifiers, and most of all, to Amanda, to her parents. And
members, before you leave, stay tuned, because we're going to have another bill coming forward that creates an Office of School Bus Safety within DPS, the Department of Public Safety. Captain Urquhart, oh, he ducked out. But the man is very capable, but he's been doing a double role. He is our captain of our commercial enforcement vehicles. And the law mandates that we have a director of pupil transportation safety, I think is the word. Okay. But we're going to introduce a bill that establishes an office of pupil transportation, and that it have at least a minimum of 4 state troopers with a probably a officer level trooper in charge of that, and at least 15 bus inspectors. So we're taking a lot of the legislative auditor's reports on some of the lacking things, and we're putting that in a bill. So stay tuned.
Thank you. Members, we will recess and immediately reconvene after the session adjourns and complete as much business as we can until 5:30. Anything not being completed would carry over to the end of Wednesday's agenda. We are in recess. 2804 Center Rest, Green Products in Schools. And I believe there is an author's amendment.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And we'll ask it to be distributed. And Senator Stumpf will move the A2 amendment. Recognizing that it's going to be in the shape that the author intends, we'll ask for that vote. All in favor of the A2 amendment, indicate aye. Opposed? Carried. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 2804 proposes that Minnesota school districts turn to using green products and environmentally sensitive products in their cleaning supplies in their school buildings. The proposal follows closely what has gone on in two other states in the country, New York and Illinois, and calls for a couple of things. One, for the school districts to use environmentally sensitive products in their cleaning with when it is economically feasible. Secondly, that they are permitted to use up whatever products they have now that would not meet standards, and then calls upon the commissioner to assemble a working group, as it were, which is what will occasion the bill, if you act favorably on it, to go to the State Government Local Operations Committee oversight, to assemble a group to come up with standards using as a model the standards that have been developed in this regard in other states. The mandate itself is softened by the amendment, which makes it not an unfunded mandate, but asks them to do this when it is economically feasible. We all know that environmental products can, on occasion, cost more to do the same job as other products. But we also know that the price of green products is constantly being reduced as they find more efficient ways to produce them. So what we are calling upon the school districts to do, once the guidelines have been set by the commissioner and the group that she would assemble to advise her, is to annually review their purchases in this area to make sure that they are considering green products with their cleaning supplies. Mr. Chairman and members, I have also the amendment specifies that the guidelines should not indicate that you can't have products that would kill bugs, as Mr. Robertson told me and advised me this morning. So we are...
Mr. Robertson, for the record.
We're from the chamber, and we are happy to accommodate that.
Okay.
And I have with me Mr. Bierman to testify in favor of the bill briefly.
Okay. Welcome, Ms. Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm David Bierman from Plymouth. We all know that there's a very big environmental concern at the present time, and it's ongoing. And we all know that we have to save our planet and our children, and we have to protect our children. We've all seen, I'm sure many of us have looked at our cleaning products in our own house or in our own place of business and seen the warnings and what they say against. Keep away from children. Do not keep away from pets. Do not inhale. So we know these are very dangerous cleaning chemicals, and they've been used for years and years and promoted for almost forever. There are studies that show that places of employment or that have used green products, the air has a cleaner environment. Now, what this means for school is that children will be able to reduce their absenteeism, because many children have not been exposed to these pollutants before from their own homes. And the cleaners or the employees who do the cleaning in these schools are being exposed to these harsh chemicals many times 40 hours a week. For students, when they have the polluted air because of these chemicals in school, they're spending 25 to 35% of their waking time on a day in school, and that they've found that many students have become asthmatic because of this, or asthma has become evident, and other respiratory. There are private schools currently using green products. For example, the Holland Center, that's in the suburb of Minneapolis, and it's a school for autistic children, and they have shown that by using green, autistic children have learned and have been better able to be more productive. Again, as we talked about the costs are coming down greatly, and the few pennies more, I mean, we're talking about a cleaning compound, which is not as the prices come down, it's a very small component in the actual cleaning of a school. What else is going to benefit from this is students are going to be able to learn at a very young age what eco-green means, because it's going to be practiced right in the school. To conclude, I believe this is just a small step forward that we can take, and it's going to help clean the air, and this are going to protect our environment and our children. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bierman. Questions? Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Russ, thank you for bringing this bill. I think it's very important. And as someone who suffers from asthma that's sometimes triggered in buildings by who knows what, I appreciate the attention being given to the green products. Senator, I'm wondering if you've had any conversation with like school board association related to the annual review. I'm a former school board chair, and we tend to do things on a biannual basis. Could you respond to that, please?
Sarmast.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Erickson Ropes, no, I have not. I was trying to find a way of getting making sure that the school district, when it was setting budgets, which I understand are annual, that they would at least consider the guidelines as they are doing their purchasing contracts. And it was not, I mean, if school budgets are done biannually, I'm certainly open to making that. But I wanted a regular review rather than just having them excused from taking into consideration green products simply because it was not going to be a mandate.
Sarah Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rust, I appreciate the bill because I have sensitivity to airborne chemicals and molds and all that kind of stuff, too. But does the green products kill staph and strep and all those kind of bacteria that kids, you know, pass around in schools?
Senator Rust.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Johnson, the task force or the advisory group commissioner would consult, would come up with guidelines in areas such as that, but it would not prevent them using products that that kill bugs, even as they're looking for environmentally sensitive chemicals to use in their cleaning supplies. So one would hope that some of the products would indeed be hostile to microbes.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify? Yes. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Steinwano on staff of the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I appreciate what Senator Rust has done here and in her amendment, making it where the language where economically feasible. And I guess the central question we have about this is the guidelines and specifications that come out of this task force and are overseen by the governor, whether those would have the impact of law or would they be purely a voluntary piece for school districts to abide by.
Well, Mr. Chairman, when these would be guidelines that would define the products, but they wouldn't have to purchase them again unless they were economically feasible. But we would hope they would come up with guidelines to give to school districts so that they would know that there were standards, that the products that they were purchasing would meet these the standards that are going to be recommended.
Hey, would anyone else like to testify? Okay, Senator Erickson Ropes moves that Senate File 2804 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. Senator Stumpf.
Just trying to incorporate the amendment. Is the task force still part of the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, yes, and that's why it needs to go to the State and Local Government Committee because my committee has oversight over the creation of new task force and an advisory group. So we would review that element of the bill rather than the substance of the policy in my committee.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, what is the benefit of the task force other than maybe a kind of a screening?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stubb, it would be input on what are the appropriate guidelines and standards to set up for products to meet that we would consider environmentally sensitive.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, would You'd think that the MPCA or somebody would have some of those
and
in place.
That commissioner and well, there were some in 1997. There were some standards set up by purchasing done by the Department of Administration. We would hope, and some school districts actually do their purchasing through them for efficiency's sake. We would hope that the current Commissioner of Education would go back and look at those guidelines and, with the advice of these other folks, would update them for the purposes of products that are used in the schools.
Okay.
Members, are we ready to vote on Senator Erickson Rope? Motion that Senate File 2804 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Ress. Mr. Behrman, testifiers. We'll go to Senator Ress' other bill, Senate File 2369, coaching background checks.
Mr. Chairman, I also have an author's amendment.
Okay, is that at the table, or could we have that distributed, the author's amendment? We're going to get our papers assembled, but on the A1 amendment, Senator Olsen moves the A1 amendment to 2369. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Carried. Senator Ress.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 2369 requires background checks for those who are in direct contact with young people in our schools who are there in a capacity other than as a licensed teaching professional. And we have had examples in the recent past of coaches that are volunteer coaches or that are hired simply to coach and are not a licensed teacher who have been charged with inappropriate behavior regarding our students. No one can guarantee that a background check is going to allow us to discover predators among those who are in contact with students either at as their teachers or in co-curricular or extracurricular activities. However, we think that parents should have the same level of confidence in terms of criminal background checks for those that come into contact with their children in an advisory capacity as their licensed teachers. The bill originally only talked about adding athletic coaches, but in conversation with the chair, he indicated that, well, what about people who are hired to do direct a musical who is not a licensed teacher? And, of course, there are any number of adult volunteers, that have that kind of capacity and with regard to our young people in the schools as well. So I agreed to do that, to change that, to make it a little bit broader, and that is what is reflected at the chair's suggestion in the author's amendment. One of the instances in which, quite frankly, again, a background check would not have revealed possible indications that a coach was not an appropriate person to be around the young people in my school district did happen recently, and we had a coach who was not a teacher has been charged with inappropriate behavior, criminal behavior. So it is something that we in my district, school district, at least the one I live in and represent three of them, are very sensitive to. And I have as my testifier today, the Assistant Superintendent Nancy Rajanen from School District 281 to testify on the experience of my school district with regard to this individuals and what the school district has done to ensure the safety of our children.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Rajanin.
Thank you. Mr. Chairperson and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to speak briefly about this. Unfortunately, the Robbinsdale Area Schools has had two rather high-profile cases involving coaches who have been working with our students in the Robbinsdale Area Schools. As a result, we certainly support this legislation and in addition, as Senator Rest has done, offer some not cautions, but some reminders of the fact that this is not a perfect system, nor can we actually develop a perfect system. The Robbinsdale Area Schools already screens our coaches, our paid employees, through the background checks, and that's a requirement of the existing legislation there. The current language allows us to test all or conduct these checks on all employees in most districts. Comply with this completely. Unfortunately, many athletic programs do use volunteer coaches, and they come in all different areas. They may be parents who join in just for a few games. They help with captains' practices, and so many school districts do volunteer checks as well, and the Robbinsdale Schools does background checks on all volunteers who are working with students. One of the things we all need to remember, though, is that the background checks are not always complete. The Bureau of Criminal Apprehension data is only as good as the data which is reported to them, and many counties actually do not report their data to the BCA, has been reported to us, and so that information is only as good as what they receive. As a result, many districts, including the Robbinsdale Area Schools, use other providers who provide more complete data, such as FBI checks or the National Predator checks, those types of things. Again, though, I do want to caution that a person's background does not necessarily predict, and unfortunately there is no legislation, there is no policy that any of us can pass that would stop either criminal behavior or just plain stupidity. But it does give some assurances to the general public that we have done due diligence in checking out volunteers.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned that there are several groups of people that already go through the background check, or like school bus drivers, if you have your own bus.
All school system. District employees, if
all
they are hired
employees.
By
okay.
the school district. Right. Now, some school districts use contracted services, like for school bus drivers, maybe they contract an outside agency for sometimes for speech therapy, those types of things. And then you require those background checks to be provided by the private agencies. The issue here is volunteers. That right now is permissive. And so we do that, but not all school districts do.
Mr. Chairman, I would also point out that it's still at the individual's responsibility to bear the financial cost of a background check.
Okay. Additional testifiers from School Boards Association.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Kirk Steinman with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we certainly applaud this approach by Senator Rest. And I think for us, we're trying. We've heard from our membership that they want to explore opportunities to improve the background check opportunities. I think the issue for us on this particular bill is the issue of consistency. Under present law, it allows a school district or a hiring authority to hire a teacher who may also be a coach based on a condition, assuming that the background check comes back and is red flagged or has a noteworthy piece. Then we, based on that information, could discharge or remove that employee. And so this piece, as we see it, wouldn't allow for that. And it would just basically the report or the background check had to be done before the employment. And so it's something that we haven't talked with Senator Rest about, but certainly I hope she would be open for that, for that consistency piece.
Senator Rest.
I certainly would and would have probably done something about it if they had contacted me before this very moment.
Okay. Well, this does need to go to the Judiciary Committee, and there would be that opportunity. Is there anyone else that would like to?
Mr. Chairman, that address? Is part of the goal of this, is to make the policy consistent. That's what we're looking for.
Is there anyone else that would like to address the committee? If not, Senator Olsen moves that Senate File 2369, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Rest. We have three remaining bills and 10 minutes. I believe that Senator Saltzman and Senator Dibble are in a press conference. We'll wait a couple of minutes. The department omnibus bill will take at least 30 or more minutes, so we will put that bill for the next meeting. And with the likelihood that it's probably going to be a few more minutes upstairs, we'll just open it up. Are there any announcements by committee members? We have the calendar. If there's a bill that you have that we don't have on here, make sure that we're aware of it. And we'll wait just a couple of more minutes in case the authors arrive and we can at least get any issues out that might need further discussion. Members, we'll recess for a few minutes and see if the authors do arrive in the next few minutes. We're in recess. $25.97 teacher background checks. And as Senator Saltzman prepares to approach, are there witnesses? I believe we have the School Boards Association and perhaps someone from Ed Minnesota. If they want to approach the table with Senator Saltzman, to the extent that this is agreed on, that can be noted for the record, if that's the case. And being distributed as an author's amendment, and we'll let Senator Saltzman proceed from here.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to introduce the A2 amendment, please.
Senator Saltzman moves the A2 amendment. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Senator Saltzman.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last fall, there was a very disturbing report that came out from the Associated Press. After 7 months of study, the Associated Press came out investigating how different states handle sexual misconduct by teachers in their state. Currently, at this time, there is nothing in state law that requires schools to make such a check. And I believe earlier today we heard testimony about a horrible tragedy that happened when there wasn't checks done on school bus drivers. And we want our children to be safe, and obviously, you know, most of the teachers in our state are extraordinary. But from time to time, there comes along a case where, because extensive efforts have not been made to check on someone's background, someone can be in our schools and could harm our children. The report that came out from the Associated Press that said that between 2001 and 2005, the State Board of Teaching in Minnesota revoked, suspended, or denied license to 69 teachers for some kind of sexual misconduct. The AP also found a total of 3 cases between that same time period where teachers working in districts where administrators did not know their past license suspensions. So what this bill does is something that many school districts already does, but we don't know that every school district does that. And that's to require that a school district, in doing a background check on a teacher, would also check the Board of Teaching's website to determine if there is a asterisk there or note there that would note that the individual has had disciplinary action taken against his or her teaching license related to sexual misconduct with a student. Now, these are not just alleged cases, but that there has been disciplinary action. And then when the asterisk appears, the school hiring authority must contact the State Board of Teaching to determine the substance of that disciplinary action. So instead of asking the school districts to call on every single employee, it gives them an opportunity to check and then to do further investigation as well. So that is the extent of this, to basically set up a mandate that schools would need to check. I know that there's been some discussion that is this an overwhelming burden for schools, you know, to have to call and make this check. And when you think about the high stakes of this, how important it is, it just seems like this is a good way to approach this. So thank you.
Okay. Ms. Holzwanger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we appreciate Senator Saltzman working with us to make sure that this language works very well for teachers, and we can ensure that districts will be hiring teachers that should be hired so that there aren't any unintended consequences. Education Minnesota believes that we should be always raising the standards for teachers and making sure that we have people who are qualified, licensed, and of good character, and I think that this bill will do that. So we thank Senator Saltzman for her work.
Thank you for working together on that. And do we have additional testifiers? Anyone else? Questions of the committee? Senator Olsen, and then I think we're ready. Oh, we'll hear from the School Boards Association as well. But Senator Olsen, go ahead.
Are there some concerns on data privacy? Or?
This is information, I understand, Mr. Chair, that is already public information, that if disciplinary action has been taken, and certainly the Board of Teaching can answer that as well, if Ms. Bonner would come up, because I asked her that as well, because I know I've had questions about that, and so there's nothing here that would not be public information. Is that correct, Ms. Bonner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, Senator Saltzman is correct. The information that when the Board of Teaching takes final disciplinary action against a teacher's license or licenses, that is public data. Right now, you could call our offices and ask about that. We are constricted very tightly. In many respects, we cannot divulge when there's an investigation or an allegation or an open file, for example, but when the Board of Teaching has taken final action against a teacher's license, which in fact requires the teacher's signature and the Board of Teaching's vote, then that is in fact public. So this would make what's already public, public in a different format.
Just a quick follow-up.
Senator Olsen.
When did teacher in their own interest refuse to sign that? I mean, if they've been found guilty of something, can you really force them to sign it? Do they sign it even though they've been charged and disciplined for it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, that is a fantastic question. And that's one of the things that we continually struggle with. We need to find resolutions to these matters that are agreeable both to the Board of Teaching and to the party in question, the teacher. And it does require their consent. In the event that there is not agreement about a settlement, the discipline, then it can, in fact, go to an administrative law judge for a hearing, and that's how it then becomes resolved.
Thank you.
Thank you. Harold.
My name is Kirk Schneider. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association, too, and we want to applaud Senator Saltzman and all the members and Karen Ballmer for their efforts in trying to shore up some of these issues in terms of the background checks. And it's something our membership has strongly supported through the delegate assembly process, and so we just want to give our approval and support to Senator Saltzman.
Thank you. Senator Torres-Ray moves that Senate file 2597 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. And thank you for
thank
your
you very much, committee.
Work during the interim on that. Finally, we have another bill that has had a lot of discussion over the past several months, and that is Senator Dibble's Senate File 3078. And we have a delete all amendment that will be offered by Senator Bonoff, the A2 author's amendment. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed,
aye.
Same sign. Carried. Senator Dibble, we now have before us Senate File 3078 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have being passed out to you
a summary, and I, forgive me, I'm sure everyone in this committee has probably read in great detail the school district student transportation evaluation report by the Legislative Auditor's Office.
Yes, so, and we have reviewed it. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you, another Senator copy Dibble. Of the summary, so you can file it in your most important papers. But the reason I'm having it passed out, Mr. Chair, is because the office, the Legislative Auditor report confirms a number of key issues that have been raised over a period of the past few years when I've been interested in this subject and have been pursuing a variety of legislative solutions to the issues that we've kind of known about and have had some evidence of through university studies and the like. The Legislative Auditor's report shows that there really is a wide variation from district to district in managing their student transportation services. And, you know, the issues I've been interested in pursuing have been to increase safety, cost effectiveness, and accountability. The auditor's report show that a lot of school districts lack written policies, who's eligible to ride, what fees are charged to whom, maximum ride times, driver qualifications. Many don't keep track of their driver qualifications. But this is especially true for districts that use contract services to provide the transportation function. Some of the findings show that contracts have never been opened. Some, you know, there's a district that didn't even have a written contract in their, as they went out in the field and took a look at how things were being conducted. Some have never opened bids for new quotations and new negotiations. The other thing that was interesting in terms of the cost effectiveness and accountability, districts that provide student transportation through contract show the widest gap between revenue and expenditures as those who have it in-house. This bill, however, the Delete All Amendment, doesn't solve those issues. But we can come back another day, perhaps. And I do know that the Department of Education, Department of Public Safety, have indicated in their response to the Legislative Auditor's report that they were going to try to take some steps to ensure those best practices, try to promulgate some best practices, and encourage school districts to adopt those. But this bill simply takes a small step in allowing for some sunshine as school districts enter into contracts. And so it's simply a requirement that when those contracts are entered into or being negotiated or being discussed, that there be some items that are fully disclosed. And very simply, Mr. Chair, I'll just run through the bill very quickly. What it asks to do is to have these contractors show what the training requirements are, how a contractor intends to recruit experienced drivers, how well potential drivers are screened so that we don't hire those that we don't want to have driving our students, how well trained the drivers are who are being hired, those aspects of the employment condition and terms that help keep qualified drivers on staff, make sure that school districts are hearing about accidents on a timely basis, make sure that they're hearing about drivers' traffic convictions, reporting the outcome of bus inspections, reporting the driver turnover rate, what is the longevity of their existing workforce. And also it allows for the safety and cost effectiveness to be factored into account when an award for student driving contract is made. Second part of the bill simply encourage and incense thorough inspections of buses by drivers by making sure that they're paid for that time that they spend inspecting their buses. And it removes the ability to pressure drivers from being able to say, this bus perhaps shouldn't be driven today. And it's, you know, sets forth a specific standard and provides for that authority of the driver to decline to take out a bus and ask that the provider try to make another bus available to that driver. Mr. Chair, with that, I can either stop for questions. We have Kim Nelson from SEIU who's ready to testify and Reese Ledger from the Teamsters. I'll also mention that the Minneapolis School Board, St. Paul School District, the Pupil Transportation Association are all comfortable with the Delete All Amendment.
And I know that you've worked hard to try to bring about a consensus package, though there are still some questions and A number of the members I know are pleased with the progress, and I know Senator Bonoff is ready now to make that motion. But what I'd like to do is have a brief statement from each of the proponents at the table, just a brief, or if they wanted to just stand ready for questions, and then we could hear from some of the others. I believe we have Galen Lenz, Shelley Jones, Tom Revenu indicated they wanted to speak. So we need to be out of here in 15 minutes. This bill would then also need to go to finance through the E-12 committee. So if your proponents, we have had interim discussion on this already, and if you'd like to add in any additional comments, but maybe state your name for the record and indicate support.
Mr. Chair, just one real quick comment. Kim Nelson, representing Service Employees International Union. We also did a community audit in conjunction with the Office of Legislative Auditors evaluation. And our community audit found that 79% of parents want their students to see the same bus driver all year long, whereas 17% have currently seen over three in the first half of the year. The other thing I do want to point out is 97% of parents indicated that they do want school districts to collect information on driver turnover rate, driver experience, and training before using public dollars entering into a private contract. So I just want to throw that out there, and I do have copies of that community audit available for those who would want to look at it more in depth.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. And Mr. Ledger.
Mr. Chair, committee, my name is Reese Ledger. I'm with Teamsters Local 120, the largest Teamster local in the state of Minnesota. In the interest of brevity, I'll be very quick. Driving is a topic that I'm very familiar with. I was a driver in New York City. I drove in some very difficult and dangerous conditions. Fortunately, I had a collective bargaining agreement that provided protections so I could drive safely and responsibly. Protections like pay for actual hours so I wasn't rushing from stop to stop in an unsafe way in order to make my livelihood. Protections like right of first refusal, so I wouldn't have to take risky roads out onto the streets and endanger myself and others. These are protections like the ones that are included in this bill, minimal protections. And you know, but there is one big difference. I was a UPS driver. I delivered packages, and the idea, not people. And the idea that there are currently more protections for people that deliver freight than school children is troubling. And at Teamsters Local 120 strongly urges support for this bill.
Thank you. Questions of the proponents? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do support this bill, and I think in the wake of what happened last week, we're more present than ever to how important it is that we do all that we can to maintain the standards and the safety of our buses and our bus drivers. And I myself have dealt with this issue because in the Hopkins School District, we've had issues with some of our drivers, and I know my son stopped being willing to ride the bus because he had he wasn't comfortable with his bus driver, so we had to drive him back and forth to school. And I know that other parents have had that same experience, and so I support the bill because I think it's important we do all we can to look at this issue and raise the level of transparency around it. Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe the three persons I mentioned, if they'd like to approach and you know, state their concerns, and we'll acknowledge the author's continued accessibility to work with stakeholders.
A little bit more so after today. So.
Yes.
It's work done. I don't know if people noticed. Okay. That.
Welcome, everyone, to the committee.
Once again, I'm Galen Lenz with the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association.
And to make sure everyone has the A2 amendment.
The what?
We're working off the A2.
Yes.
Okay.
The last thing we just saw.
Okay, please proceed.
First of all, I'd like to state that generally school districts and private operators work hand-in-hand to service the district and allow the operator to invest in his or her operation. The contractor then takes the responsibility off the district's shoulders to find and train drivers, to maintain vehicles, set up routes, find substitutes, worry about road conditions, student discipline, parental calls, etc. It also puts the operation on the tax rolls, helping to maintain the district and the community in which they serve. To this point, we are the most exposed and unprotected industry in the state. There is no guarantee that for all we have invested that we will be around tomorrow if we do not negotiate a contract. The school district can call for bids if they are unsatisfied with a service that they are receiving. However, they also need to be able to work with the people with whom they are comfortable and that they feel is safe and reliable. This is not like the bread company or the milk company that has many customers and can pick up other accounts and service them with one vehicle. We need many vehicles to service one account and do it safely and efficiently. We cannot take our equipment or our land and buildings and go down the road and work. Senator Dibble and the SEIU has implied in the past that districts that contract their services out are not as safe as districts that have theirs in-house. I believe this to be an untrue statement. I believe if you want that if you want a question answered if we're unsafe or not, is you need to go and ask the state inspectors and Captain Urquhart, who go to every operation in the state, whether it be public or private, and ask, because they see all the fleets, they see the driver's files and the drug and alcohol testing, I believe that they will state that we are just as safe, if not safer, because this is our business. If we don't do it safely, we are out of business. And then for 99% of us small contractors, we are bankrupt, and then we are ruined. So I believe we are just as safe as the in-house service. I've not gotten a chance to totally review the new bill here. I believe a lot of it appears that it is data collection. I know the Department of Ed is proposing a model contract. The Department of Public Safety is reviewing, updating their database that would allow the districts to get data about drivers, to get data about buses and inspections. Also, I know the Legislative Auditor's Office spent a lot of time compiling data, and nowhere in their recommendations is there anything about using legislation concerning the transportation industry. The recommendations fall to the Department of Ed, Department of Public Safety, and the local control by school districts. I remember sitting here last year, and I remember hearing Senator Salzman say that she believes in local control, and we believe in that also. I would also like to remind or make the statement that driving a school bus is a part-time job, and it is seasonal. It is not a full-time job. I wish I could pay my drivers more. I would love to be able to pay them $25 an hour, 8 hours a day to make them stick around, but the state of Minnesota does not fund that to the districts that way. Also, as far as experience, driver experience is everything in this. But also, somewhere there needs to be a district that gives a new driver that first day and give them their experience. When it comes down to where he talked about, where the senator talked about driver's pay, we believe that the state does not belong in this area. There is already in place minimum wage standards. The operator employees need to be allowed and have the flexibility to work out agreements that fit the individual situations. What works in Minneapolis does not work in St. James or Thief River Falls or Preston, Minnesota. This should be left alone and up to the individual companies. And the right to refuse, bus operators are already under the statutes that they do not operate unsafe buses. That is the reason there are qualified and inspected spare units to use in these times. And we believe this is another regulation that is not needed. We do not know of no operator in our organization that would fine or penalize a driver for this. This is legislation we feel that should not be enacted. Every year we're always looking for ways to better our industry. We know that any time there's a school bus accident, it makes the headlines, and it makes our whole industry come together, and we cringe when it happens. But we are trying to better ourselves also. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lanza. Ms. Jones.
I'm Shelley Jonas. I represent the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. And this past summer, we surveyed our members and found that we have an average 40 years experience in the industry, and that our average member company provides 46 hours of training to new drivers, as well as additional training throughout the year. We also contribute about $50,000 a year in property taxes. And we're private businesses that have a vested interest in our communities. I think that as far as the last section with the school bus drivers, those seem to be individual issues. There is industry practice to pay drivers per route, and I think that there's probably some unknowing about the drivers knowing exactly how that rate was figured out. Perhaps they got route pay for $25 an hour, and that includes a one-hour route and 15 minutes for pre- and post-trip inspection. I do not believe that there is a lot of contractors who are not paying their drivers for that. And I just agree with what Galen said, too, about the inspection with drivers refusing to drive buses. I think that's probably an individual issue and not an industry-wide concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Mr. Chair, I don't.
Senator Olson.
Thank you. I don't believe I heard you right. Did you say 40 years experience?
That's correct.
Was that fleet-wide or? I don't understand what that means because that's not per individual driver.
No, that would be the company has been in business for 40 years.
Oh, I thought you were talking about
the membership
experience. Okay.
That's what
company,
I thought.
But also, we'd like to state, you know, what happens in certain places is not also statewide because we just congratulated one of my drivers down in Lake Crystal for 52 years of service. He started when he was 18 right out of high school, and he's driven the same route. He's driven three generations. So what happens where it could be an individual concern in certain areas is not necessarily a statewide problem. And we do know that you do have, there is driver turnover, especially in the Twin Cities market to where you have all these jobs that are available. But this is still considered a part-time job.
Mr. Revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Revenue, and I'm counsel for the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. Excuse me. With regard to Section 4 of the proposed Bill 3078, both Subdivision 1 and Subdivision 2 are completely unnecessary under existing law. With regard to the driver pay, both the federal and the state wage laws require that employees, including school bus drivers, be paid for the time that they're actually worked. So that provision is completely redundant with existing law. In addition, with regard to Subdivision 2, the right to refuse to drive vehicles, again, that is something that school bus drivers and any employee, they're already provided that protection under existing both state and federal law. Both the Occupational Safety and Health Act as well as the Minnesota Occupational Safety and Health Act provide that employees can refuse to perform work if that work is, in their mind, to be unreasonable. Consistent with an issue raised by Senator Olstein on a prior bill with regard to the data gathering, I'm not sure whether any of this information that is actually being demanded of the school districts would actually fall under data practices, and I don't see that issue being addressed within the bill. That's all I have.
Thanks. Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibbler, testifiers, to that last point you were making about Subdivision 1 and 2 already being in existing law, Senator Dibble, is there a reason, do you believe that's true, that there already is existing law addressing those two subdivisions? And then, if so, to the testifiers, is there some reason to object if it's already in law?
Senator Dibble.
Both. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Erickson-Ropes, I don't know. If we're talking about Section 2, Subdivision 1 and 2 on page 2. I just don't know. This is in response to what I understand to be not an uncommon practice for drivers to only to not be paid for their time that they spent inspecting their buses and for drivers to be pressured to drive buses that they're uncomfortable driving.
I would also like to clarify one issue that you're raising with regard to the driver pay section. The U.S. Supreme Court came down with a decision, I believe, in the last year with regard to payment for donning and doffing, time spent before somebody actually performs the work. And the Supreme Court made it very clear that that time is compensable time and somebody has to be paid. With regard to the second sentence where drivers must be scheduled and paid a minimum of additional 15 minutes, I don't believe that is existing law under both state or federal law, to clarify my testimony. My point is that employees who spend time performing inspections, that's compensable time, whether it's 5 minutes or it's 20 minutes. And therefore, I don't think it's necessary to have a redundant law. With regard to the right to refuse work, again, that's case law under both the Occupational Safety and Health Act as well as under MnOSHA's administrative decisions, where employees have the right to refuse to perform work where it is, in fact, unsafe.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't think the witness is working off of the A2 amendment. There's no reference to the 15 minutes. So can we make sure that he has a copy of the of the A2 amendment?
I'm sorry. I did have – I was referring to the last – the eight with the A2 amendment, the 15-minute was redacted, so that's not relevant to my to my testimony.
And Mr. Chair, I'll just say that I think Erickson, Senator Erickson-Rope's point is a good one. If it's redundant, then there should be no problem with restating it so that Minnesota or Minnesota legislature's intent is clear.
Okay. And Mr. Deans, did you want to testify? If we could make room for John Deans.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think that this whole bill kind of asks the school district, puts a burden on them to micromanage the free enterprise system. You know, it's getting into involved in a lot of stuff that we can already do through the contract system. And so that's Senator Ropes, that's our reasoning for not wanting this a part of it.
Thank you. Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble. Do you require the same disclosures from the school districts if they have their own bus fleet?
Chair Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was in my original bill, you know, which was really written to the legislative auditor's report. You know, it basically took all of the legislative auditor's report recommendations, and we drafted a bill to that. This bill is confined to the student, those who contract for student transportation, though. Part of it was just a function of frankly, of time and ability to get everyone in the same room to converse over what was acceptable. This seemed to be the piece that folks were comfortable moving forward with.
Mr. Deans.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom Deans, and I'm legal counsel to the School Board Association. Some of the things I was going to say have already been said. There are a couple of things that we just kind of need to clarify a little bit. And we had a meeting this afternoon with SEIU to try to see if we could understand what on this amendment, because this just came up. On line 1.9, we talk about an initiated transportation service contract. I don't know what an initiated contract is. I don't know what that term means, and I don't know whether anybody else knows what that term means. But and maybe that word was supposed to be something else. Maybe it was supposed to be an initial contract or something, but it isn't clear. It doesn't really have a meaning. The other piece that I can't understand from this is this thing that's supposed to be attached to your contract with them. When is this supposed to be attached? Is this an ongoing stuff that gets attached, or is this at the time you do bids, or when does this happen? I mean, is this a constantly updated piece that you have to keep throwing this stuff in the file every time somebody gets a ticket, or is it just saying these concepts have to be attached to the contract, what they're going to do? It's very difficult to tell that, and also, like when you get to number two, where you have the driver and retention plan, and then we list four things that are under that plan. I mean, it seems to me if they have a driver and retention plan, if this is saying they have to attach it to the contract, I don't know why you need to be more prescriptive. When you get down to four, where you've got the explanation of the wage rates and employee benefits or policies, I mean, these are private entities. They do compete with each other for these employees in these jobs, why we would be require them to file their wage rates with us. When we do the bid for a dollar figure to do the service. That's really none of our business. Now, it may have something to do with whether people stay or not, but the other thing that may have something to do with whether they stay or not is whether they graduate from school and move on to another job or anything like that. But any of these, when you have these 15 things, somebody's got to realize this is going to make these contracts more expensive. Somebody's going to have to be updating this stuff all the time. This will make it more expensive. That's fine, as long as you understand that. We don't really get any more money for transportation than what's in that formula. This school bus driver turnover rate thing down at the bottom is a little hard to figure out how that deal works. But one of the things, when you look at line 2.1, it doesn't. You don't have to include people that are terminated or otherwise removed from service at the direction of the local school district. But if the contractor fires them because they're not doing the job, that would still count against them. I mean, I think you ought to add some language in there. It says if they're removed from service for cause or at the direction of the school district. That way, if they fire people that aren't doing a good job, you would at least wouldn't hurt, you know, wouldn't be shown as a negative on their part. On this, there's been a lot of discussion on Section 2. I would point out Section 2 applies to both district drivers and to contract drivers. Subdivision 1 is telling us what driver pay has to be. I was under the understanding under PELRA we were supposed to negotiate terms and conditions of employment rather than do it the other way. On the one more point, Senator, on the right to refuse thing, it's not clear here who makes this determination that the bus meets the out-of-service definition of the rule so that the driver doesn't have to do it. The problem that I've got is not so much in these big districts in the metro where you've got first service, one bus goes down, you know, they send to the garage and get the next one out, but we're outstate Minnesota where you've got the four-bus operation running four routes, and the driver says, I'm not going today, these tires are bald, we're not going, and the kids are already on the bus stop. My simple question is what do we do about the kids? Now, I understand if the bus blows up or if it doesn't start or whatever, you have the same problem with the kids. But if that driver decides that he's going to pull that pin today and the kids are already out there and it's cold and the parents are at work, that can be a problem. I think we could look at some window. You know, there had been a report filed that the bus didn't comply and we didn't fix it or something. I understand that. Or some emergency services, that sort of thing. But I, you know, I think that second part can already be taken care of without putting
Mr.
it in
Chair?
This bill.
Senator Olsen.
As a former school board member, we took whatever Tom Dean said very seriously, I got to say. But I'm wondering if I can maybe throw out an olive branch here. I don't have this bill drafted yet, but it's the School Bus Office of Pupil Transportation Safety. And one of the lines is talking about this office would be developing and maintaining a consistent record-keeping system to document school bus inspections, out-of-service school transportation vehicles and driver files, and conducting periodic audits on selected school districts. And I'm wondering if we just couldn't maybe look at these two bills and see what things would fit together and not have to duplicate some of these things. If you'd be willing, I don't know if the process, if you would pull the bill for now or hold on or keep it going. Okay. Yeah. And then, but looking at as these two bills move forward, maybe there's some real common ground that could be blended.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, I take the critiques to heart. I think they're productive. School Boards Association has had a couple years now, and now the auditor's report shows us that school districts simply aren't, you know, this is simply a sunlight disclosure bill. This is the kind of stuff that school districts should know about. So I don't understand the resistance. I don't understand the lack of conversation over the past couple years and the lack of offering something more proactive. This hasn't been any secret. This is a conversation we've been having for a few years. Now we've got the auditor's report that's telling us something's got to happen. We got to, you know, school district got to get engaged and manage this function, particularly when they're contracted services. So, you know,
Mr. Chair.
Appreciate the testimony at the table, but wish we had a little time in between these forums to have more fruitful conversation. And I will take Senator Olsen up on his offer because I think he's been working very, very hard and very focused on these issues as well.
Members, it's my intent to process this or at least to entertain a motion in a few minutes, recognizing that there will be additional opportunities to discuss this in the Finance Committee as well as other bills addressing student safety for bus rides as we had earlier, and there will be different vehicles. So keeping that in mind, I'd like to call on Senator Saltzman, and we'll go to you, Mr. Lenz, and then we'll entertain a motion.
Right. And thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I do like this bill because I think what has happened, what we've seen, is that when school districts are not operating their buses, I get calls from parents. They call me when their school district is not responding because they have an independent, and I've had to fix several different issues, particularly because school bus drivers are such a changeover, and with kids who have disabilities or have any special needs are being dropped off on the wrong side of the street. And having some of this information tightens it up for everybody. It sort of tells everybody, did it get quiet in here all of a sudden? A fan go off or something?
Yeah.
They're turning off the heat in the building. That it just seems that it tightens things up to make sure that our school districts are kind of watching and also our bus companies. And that stands true for all buses, whether they are operated by the school district or by an independent outside vendor. So there are pieces in here that I very much support. I think that in the part that talks about employee wages, I understand some of that and competition, so if there's a way to maybe work on that piece of it. But I do think there are things in here, and I am concerned when school bus drivers, if they're paid for a route and something happens outside of their control, that we shouldn't penalize them because of weather or traffic, because they should always be thinking about the children's safety. So,
Mr. Lenz, brief statement.
Sure. I reading through this, like it says, it's targeting the contractors and really not the school districts. And you had mentioned that it, whether it's school district owned or contracted owned, that everything should be accountable. I urge you, if you have questions about that, please ask Captain Urquhart and his inspectors if we are unsafe. I believe they will tell you a totally different story, that our files are sure, there are districts that probably are skating thin. There probably are some contractors are doing the same thing. But I believe they will tell you that contractors do just as good a job maintaining their files, keeping their drivers up to date, doing the drug and alcohol testing. I urge you to ask them that question.
And members, the Department of Public Safety, where Captain Urquhart and the Transportation Committee, which some of you are members, has jurisdiction on that and staffing. I believe Senator Olsen's going to have some additional legislation addressing staffing inspections, and that's where those questions will be more directed. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 3078, as amended, be re-referred to Finance.
Recommended to pass?
Yeah. Recommended to pass and re-referred to Finance. Thank you.
And Senator Bonoff's motion, further discussion. Also, I want to thank everyone for their participation. I realize it's not at the point where some of you would like it. There has been compromise thus far, and ask that you continue to work with the author and other stakeholders as we keep in mind the ultimate objective of a safe ride for students. There being no further discussion, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Same sign. Carried. Thank you, Senator Dibble. And members, the Department Omnibus Policy Technical Bill will be on the next agenda for Wednesday. Please let us know if there's any additional items that you'd like scheduled. Committee's adjourned.